Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit now about the actual grading process. We'll talk about the things that we look for here in CS50 when we're looking at students' code and how to evaluate it and the various axes that we're paying attention to and what sorts of questions we're asking. And then after I talk for a little bit, we'll get an opportunity to do a bit of hands-on practice. We'll give you all some sample submissions to some of our problems, and we can do some group grading practice just to get a feel for how it is that we look at grading and assessment when thinking about problems in CS50. So in CS50, we evaluate every problem on three different axes, correctness, design, and style. And I'll talk in more detail about each one of those three in terms of what it is that we're looking for in each one and what each one means. But effectively, this is the formula that we use when we're calculating a student's final score on any particular assignment. We take their correctness score, multiply it by 3, take their design score, multiply it by 2, and then take their style score, just so that we're roughly weighting each of the three axes by their relative importance, so to speak. And that's how we ultimately compute the final score. So I'll talk about each one of these three axes and what it is that they mean and what it is that we're looking for. And so each of our axes in CS50 here are graded on a 5-point scale, where 5 points really means this was best, there was no room for improvement, the staff would have been proud to turn in something of this quality. 4, 3, and 2 are sort of the in-between. 1 is generally for very poor submissions, and 0s are basically only ever reserved for no attempt was made at all on this particular axis. And so we'll go through some examples of what those numbers mean for each of the various axes on which we grade. So starting with correctness, this is the most important category for students' final grades and the first thing that we're really looking for. And correctness is really answering the question, to what extent is your code, the student's code, consistent with our specification and free of bugs? So when we give a problem to students, there's a specific list of instructions with a specification for that problem, describing what it is that the program should do, what types of input it should accept, what it should do about invalid input, what the output should be depending on that input. And correctness is really just answering the question, does the code work? Does it meet the requirements that we're setting out in those instructions? And generally speaking, on our 5-point scale, we think of a 4 or a 5 as good scores for correctness. That 5 means, you know, everything worked exactly the way it was supposed to work. Here were the requirements, and the student met them. 4 usually means that the student forgot about a couple things or overlooked a couple of corner cases or edge cases. And so they were close to getting it near right, but not quite there. 2 and 3 usually means there were some larger correctness issues where some larger portion of the program wasn't quite working. And 1 is usually reserved for almost the entire thing really doesn't work. And maybe there was some attempt, but the program isn't really up to the specification. And again, 0 is generally reserved for no attempt was made at all for trying to make sure that the program was actually correct. And so in order to help you with evaluating correctness, we do provide Check 50, which Chad and Yellow were demonstrating yesterday. So if you don't remember, Check 50 is a command line tool. It's built into CS50 IDE. And what it does is it runs automated checks on students' code. That for a problem, we have predefined a list of sample inputs and sample outputs about how the program should behave given valid input or invalid input. And we can test students' code automatically so that you don't have to spend your time going through each of your students' code and running it on a dozen different inputs and outputs and checking it to make sure it's right. That Check 50 can just take care of that automatically for you. So students also have access to Check 50 for many of the problems in CS50 AP, and they're encouraged to use it. It's a good tool for students if they're not sure if their code is working quite right, if they think that they've got it working but aren't sure about potential edge cases, that they are free and welcome to run Check 50 as well to see how am I doing on this problem, is this code working? And so this is often a very valuable resource for students too. And so if you've used Check 50 before, you've seen that the output generally looks like a sequence of smiley faces and sad faces, where the smiley face means you passed this particular check, and the sad face means you didn't. And all smiley faces generally means that the program is totally correct. However, we do want to emphasize that Check 50 can be used to help you grade correctness, but we take its output to be suggestive and not determinative. What that means is that just because a student got all of the smiley faces on Check 50, that all the check cases passed, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to get a 5 on correctness. Usually it does, because usually it means that the program is correct. But there is the possibility that the student passes all the checks, but there's still something that's not correct about the program. So maybe if there are particular there are particular problems, for example, that have corner cases that check 50 is checking for. And some students have taken the approach of, well, if they've run check 50 and they see, oh, my program fails for input 28, let me just manually say, OK, if the input is 28, here is the correct output, and not actually work on solving the problem. Or likewise for the Mario problem, if you've tried it before, where students are asked to, given some input of a height, display a pyramid of that height. And check 50 isn't testing for all possible height values. There have been a couple students every year that will just say, OK, for each of the height values that check 50 is checking, if the height is 5, here, I'm going to print out a pyramid of height 5. And if the height is 6, print out a pyramid of height 6. And obviously, that's not correct, because even though it's passing check 50's checks, it's not meeting the specification of the problem. And so check 50's output should be a way of guiding you to what the correctness score should be. And most of the time, you can just use that as the correctness score. But it's always good to give another look through the code and make adjustments to the correctness score if need be. Check 50 also supports your own unit tests and problems. So if you're writing a custom problem that's not one of the problems that we provide as part of CS50, you're going to have the ability to write your own check 50 tests as well, such that students can use that as a resource if they want to, and you can use it as a resource too if you want to use that to grade student submissions. Questions about correctness and how we evaluate that? OK. In terms of grading in general, for each of the problems that we provide, we have a set of grading guidelines. And you'll get to see some of those grading guidelines later today when we break out into smaller groups and start practicing on some of these grading problems. And the grading guidelines cover things that you should be looking for in terms of what common mistakes might be and how we think about those mistakes. And one thing that we think about in correctness, and all axes in particular, is that we don't want to punish students for the same mistake over and over. So check 50, for example, in the Caesar Vigenère problems is expecting students to display the text like plain text and ciphertext at the beginning and end of the problem. And you know, occasionally a student will misspell plain text. And as a result, all of check 50's tests will return red because none of it worked because it didn't find the word plain text. And in those cases, it doesn't make sense to give the student a 0 out of 5 on correctness because all the checks passed. These are cases where we want to, even though check 50 gave a score, we should be taking another look at it in order to make sure that we're not punishing students for the same mistake multiple times. OK, the second axis that we look at after correctness, which is weighted as 3 out of a student's total score, is design, which is weighted as 2 out of the student's total score. And design is answering the question, to what extent is the student's code written well, meaning clearly or efficiently, elegantly or logically? And this is probably the most difficult axis to grade and also the most subjective of the axes to grade. That for correctness, it's very clear. Here are the requirements, and the student's code either meets those requirements or it doesn't. Design can be difficult, in particular because design is evolving. That what once upon a time might have been considered good design in a computer program, like go-to statements, for example, may now be generally considered poor design. And different people even now might reasonably disagree about what good design is and what bad design is. And so this can be a difficult thing to evaluate. And in a moment, I'll show you some examples of things that were generally looking for when trying to evaluate design holistically. So design does tend to be the most time consuming of all of the axes to grade, because for correctness, you can just run check 50, and you can get a correctness score that's usually reasonably accurate. As of right now, no tool is really good enough, and no tool may ever be good enough to really evaluate the design of students' code. And so it really becomes more about us looking at students' code and trying to make judgments about it, to think critically about it, and evaluate it in terms of how well it's designed. And in the long term, what really helps in design is less the design score out of how many points out of 5 they got on design, but really the qualitative feedback. That when we're working with our teaching fellows here at the college, we really make an effort to encourage most of the staff to be spending most of their time on grading, leaving qualitative design feedback. Feedback about how could you have designed this program better, how could it have been more efficient or more logical or organized better. And so this sort of feedback, whether it's provided via GitHub or whether it's just you render 50, print out the student's code and provide comments on that, that tends to be what really helps students to learn the most, because they begin to think about reflecting on the problem that they submitted, how could they have done it better? Even if they got everything right, even if all the correctness checks passed, that doesn't necessarily mean that their code was the best that it could be. So here are some questions to consider when you're thinking about design. Do you see repetition that could be eliminated? Do you see loops that could be eliminated? Do you see magic numbers, hard-coded constants that could be eliminated? In fact, this very slide could use some design improvements, because I see some repetition there. So we can eliminate repetition or loops or magic numbers. Is there a shorter way to accomplish the same thing? Could you have taken code and moved it into a different function if the code is just starting to get really long, or if there's redundant code where a function may have helped in that respect? So these are common things that we're looking for and that we'll encourage you to look for when we break out into smaller groups and work on practice for grading that. So if you can answer yes to any of those questions, probably the student will not be receiving a perfect design score. I very rarely ever give out 5 out of 5 on design, because almost always there is something that could be improved. There is an area where you can provide some feedback or suggestion, even if the code is really, really good. So let's take an example. So this is an excerpt from the problem Greedy, now known as Cache, where the goal of the problem is to take some amount of change and figure out how many coins it might take in order to make that amount of change. And so this is an example of what we might consider a good submission for calculating the number of coins that we need. So change is a variable representing the number of cents that we're trying to make in terms of coins. And we're trying to store in a variable called coins how many coins it would have taken to make this amount of change. So let's take a look at this. Why would we consider this a good example of design, maybe a 3 out of 5 or so?
The curly brackets there.
What about the curly brackets? Oh, good point. So the point is about the curly braces. And so CS50 does have a style guide where generally we want the curly braces to be on the next line. That's something we would generally consider a style issue more than a design issue. We'll get to style in a moment. Design is more about how the program works, and style is more about how the program looks. And so the curly braces is generally more of a style issue. Yeah?
The coins increment doesn't have to be listed 4 times.
The coins increment doesn't have to be listed 4 times. Great. There's redundancy here, that at the end of each of the if statements, we have coins plus plus. And that's something that's repetitive that we could factor out. That's definitely an area for design improvement. Other things? Yeah?
You don't have to go through all of those checks in every loop of the while loop, right? So like, if once you get past the quarters, now you're going to be taking out the dimes. You don't have to go back and check again for the quarters. So it feels like it's doing a lot of checks that are not really necessary.
Exactly. We're doing a lot of checks that aren't really necessary, that there's ways to make this more efficient, that rather than having all of these conditions inside of the loop, once we get down to dimes or nickels, there's no reason to keep checking quarters at the beginning of every loop again. So certainly areas for improvement there. Yeah?
Yeah. The loop might run multiple times for the same denomination. Like if I have 60 cents, I might run twice into the quarter thing. Could be solved easier with the divide operator and maybe just run the modulo into the next one.
Great. So there are more efficient ways of potentially solving the problem using division or the modulo operator for sure. So first of all, this solves the problem. So this is not a bad example. So they've logically thought this through. They have a reasonable way of trying to approach this, getting at the solution. And this is something that we commonly see. As it was pointed out, there's really one large loop here that there are a lot of branches on each iteration of the loop, which are areas where there's potential room for improvement. And coins plus plus is common code. We could factor it out and move it to the end of the loop rather than have it in each of the different if conditionals. And that would be better design. And so let's take a look at this example, something a little bit better. Why is this better than the last example? What do we notice about this version of attempting the same logic? They're both correct.
Once you're done with the quarters, you're done with the quarters.
Once you're done with the quarters, you're done with the quarters. We don't go back. At the end of that, we immediately move on to dimes. And you never have to worry about checking for greater than 25 cents again, because once you're less than 25 cents, there's no way you're ever going to get more than 25 cents again by this logic. Great. Yeah?
It doesn't use a loop, because if you give a nickel, like you'll never have an opportunity to give 2 nickels, because that's a dime. So it doesn't use any looping for the nickels or the pennies.
Great. We don't use any looping for the nickels or the pennies. So this student was thoughtful enough to realize that you're never going to use two nickels to make some amount of money, because if you could use two nickels, you may as well just use a dime, and that would be more efficient. And so there's an if condition checking for nickels, but we don't really need a loop there. And likewise for pennies, we know that whatever number of pennies we need at the end, there's no reason to do some sort of loop over those pennies. However many, if I need 4 cents, just use 4 pennies, and that's the number of coins that I need.
But this was making a different result from the previous.
This is solving the same problem as the previous one.
What was the initial question?
The initial question here was, why is this better designed than the first example that we saw?
You have a program that is answering a question. So what's the initial? Just the number of coins or
the minimum
number of coins?
Oh, good question. So the original question of the problem in cash is, given some number of cents, some amount of change, find out the minimum number of coins it would take in order to provide that change. So if the example was 28 cents, for example, the answer would be 4 coins. You would use 1/4 and 3 pennies to make that amount of money.
This one is going to give you a different answer from the previous one.
This code, I believe, should provide the same answer as the previous one.
Really? Yeah. The other one, you check for quarters, then dimes, then nickels, so you may have.
So this is the original version. And the logic here is that if there's more than 25 cents that remaining in the change, we'll just use 1/4. And we'll keep using 1/4 so long as we have more than 25 cents. As soon as there's fewer than 25 cents remaining, then we move on to dimes or nickels or pennies, respectively, in order to get the correct number of coins at the end. But if you're ever unsure of whether or not the programs are producing the right output, that's what check 50 is for. That you can run check 50 and use that to evaluate the correctness of the program. OK, so recap on this example, this better example. So it still solves the problem correctly. We no longer have what was pointed out before about having multiple different branches in each of the in the loop that doesn't need to be there. We're recognizing that we only ever have one nickel, and so we can be a little bit clever about that. And then at the end, we can just take advantage of the change at the end and just use that as the number of pennies. But as was pointed out, there are still potentially better ways of doing this. So maybe this is what the best example of design might be, that if you have change, you can take advantage of the division and modulus operators that were pointed out in order to figure out how many coins you might need. So this doesn't use any loops at all. It recognizes that when you divide two integers in C, it's automatically going to do floor division. It'll truncate whatever the decimal might be. And so if I take the amount of change and divide it by 25, what I'm going to get is the number of quarters that I actually need. And then I just take the remainder and figure out how to make that amount of change as well. And so this is much shorter than the previous examples. And generally speaking, though certainly not always, shorter code is often a good proxy for good design, that if the code is shorter, it's oftentimes more efficient, or it doesn't involve as much redundancy. And if you see a really long piece of code to try and achieve the same thing, usually that means more room for improvement. Not always the case, but generally you can think of shorter code as a good proxy for evaluating how good the design is. But can anyone see room for improvement here? Is this the best possible design?
Is there an extra plus sign on the first operation?
Is there an extra plus sign? The plus equal sign is just shorthand for.
Yeah, but you don't have an initial value for coins. You're adding to whatever previous value of coins you had.
Good question. So the point is, we don't have an initial value for coins. And in the full problem, this is just an excerpt from the problem's code, you would need to have defined the variable coins up higher in the code in order to make this work and initialize it to 0. Yeah. Good point. Can anyone think of possible improvements here? You know that you can have one nickel at most.
Because you've already removed all the dimes. That's possible. Right, but you can. Yeah, I was just thinking you can only have at most one nickel if you can use that.
But you could have no nickels.
You could have no nickels as well.
Yeah, certainly. So you would need to account for the possibility that you either have a nickel or you don't have a nickel. But you're right that we couldn't have two nickels by that point in time. And this code theoretically could support that. Other thoughts on how we might improve this or make it better?
I suppose you could. Yeah? Well, if it's better, have to count the number of lines of code, but make an array of 25, 10, and 5 and loop over it.
Yeah, so the suggestion was, could you make an array of 25, 10, and 5 and loop over that? Certainly, that would be possible. It might look something like this, where you have an array of values of 25, 10, and 5. And rather than divide each time and take the modulus, you might loop over that array and just have that common code inside of the for loop as opposed to needing to write it out each time. And so maybe this is better. But again, this is where people might reasonably disagree. That some people say, oh yeah, this is much better. There's no more repetition. And other people might say, well, this is now just less clear, that the other one was more direct in terms of explaining what was happening at each step. And so people might reasonably disagree about design in that respect as well.
If you're going to do that, one should be one of the four. You should have four values, and the last one should be one.
Yeah, and so the suggestion here, which is a very reasonable argument, that is that, well, if you're going to do it this approach, then really values should include pennies in order to make it clear, because there are four different denominations and not just three. And maybe that would make it less efficient, but maybe it would make it more clear. So these are, again, the trade-offs that have to be weighed and why design can sometimes be a little more subjective. So it's, I think, really helpful to talk about with students these sorts of design considerations. One thing that I like to do in my sections is, after a problem, start to go through that problem and thinking about various different ways it could be designed and what the various trade-offs are there. Because even if the student did it this way instead of the other way, it's important that they're aware of those trade-offs and that they're at least thinking about those things. And they can come to a decision and make a judgment one way or another, but that the cleanliness of the code and the efficiency of the code and how logical the code is should be things that we're encouraging students to think about as they're approaching design.
How would you grade this one as opposed to the other one?
How would I grade this one as opposed to the other one? I think personally, and I've used this example many times, so I've seen them both enough times, that I would rate both of them as basically one of the best solution. I'd have to sort of see how it fits into the larger context of the problem, but I'm OK with both of them, personally. Yeah?
What would you do on the previous one if they had said q or quarters equals and then change divided by 25 and then change, and everything else is the same, and then dimes is equal to change divided by 10? So they're incorporating more variables, but it's very clear what you're doing when you're dividing.
So the question is, what do you do if the student is incorporating more variables than necessary, but the incorporation of more variables helps to make it more clear? Again, this is a question that doesn't have a this is the answer. It just becomes more of a trade-off. And usually, this becomes more of a problem at the extremes, that if there's like a huge overuse of variable names, that becomes a clear case where it's probably more poorly designed. But the introduction of a variable name for the sake of cleanliness or making it easier to understand in a larger block of code, that can be very helpful. And so I would generally take that on a case-by-case basis and look at the piece of code and see, does this variable actually help in some way? Does it make it, especially if it's used more than once, although even if it's not, if it really helps to make it more logical or more understandable, that can be a good thing. Yes?
Yeah. Is this grading assuming that you have gone through the entire course, or you are still at the beginning where you are making peanut butter sandwich, and then you are identifying as one is the best and the other one is less better.
So the question is the way that we grade, assuming that the student has made it through the entire course or just at the beginning of the course? And the answer is that we'll generally. So in terms of how we grade the course as a whole, one of the main things that we're really caring about is where students end up relative to where they began at the beginning. In terms of the evaluation of a problem, our grading standards are fairly consistent. That, of course, as the problems get more difficult, the design considerations also become more difficult as a result, that in simpler problems, there are fewer design decisions to be made. But a 5 is still a 5. And just because the student's in their first week of a class, we're still going to be providing qualitative feedback that is encouraging students to think about, OK, well, here's how you might consider this problem or approach the problem if you had more experience, or as you start to get more experience, here are the things that you could and should be thinking about and answering.
Brian, just I want to quickly touch on how we might handle this in the different kinds of sections that we have.
Oh, good question. Yeah, so the other thing is that here at the college, at least, we divide students into comfort levels, that when they first arrive and enter and enroll in CS50, we ask them to rate their own personal comfort with computer science. They can designate themselves either less comfortable or more comfortable or somewhere in between. And depending upon that, they're placed into a section with people that are of that same comfort level. So if you are a more comfortable student, you're put into a section of other more comfortable students, and you're graded by a teaching fellow for that more comfortable section. And if you're a less comfortable student that's never touched computer science before, we put you in a section of also less comfortable students where you're being graded by a teaching fellow who's only grading students in that less comfortable environment. And those are cases where we might, where the more comfortable students are, the more comfortable teaching fellows can often expect more out of the more comfortable students because in the initial problems, at least, they've had more experience. And so they can be looking for things like, did you really take advantage of the modulus operator, the division operator? And these are things that they can really be looking for as well. Yeah?
I'm not sure if this is design or style, but I, for example, if I got that code from a student, I would actually tell him that values is an extremely poor variable name, just like object or number or anything totally generic. What would be the best way in CS50 framework to make these suggestions?
So the point is that values in this case, probably a pretty poor name for a variable because values is very vague. Like values of what? If you're reading the code, it's not clear. So a better name here might be like denominations. These are the different denominations of the currency that we can look at. And the answer is that in this case, this is a great opportunity just to provide qualitative feedback. That is more helpful than what the score is you saying, you know, values is not a great name for a variable. Here are some other things that you can consider. GitHub has a great feature where you can do inline comments that on any line of students' code, you can make a comment specifically on that line. And likewise, on paper, writing a comment next to that line, I think, would be very valuable as well. Yes?
So could you have like the same design in like the less comfortable getting a 5, but in the more comfortable getting a 3 or 4? Would that be possible?
So the question is, could a less comfortable section student end up getting a 5 on something that in a more comfortable section someone might have gotten a 3 or 4? We generally, in the college at least, try to standardize. And we do grading practice similar to what we're going to be doing in just a moment, where we look at code together and say, OK, this is a 3, this is a 4. One thing that we've often found is that the more comfortable teaching fellows do tend to be a little bit harsher. But there's also variability across all of our staff, that some teaching fellows just are naturally harsher graders than others. And so what we do is at the end of term, we do a normalization process such that you're not penalized if your teaching fellow just happened to be one of the harsher ones, that we normalize that to make sure that everyone is on an even playing field. OK, yeah, one more.
Oh, I find with very, very new programmers, like coins plus equals using the shortcut operator, you don't always see that, especially at the beginning. It'll be coins equals coins, da 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 da. Or that they are redundant with like a Boolean value where they have to say the Boolean value equals true. Like so those types of things. Would you consider that more just give a comment for feedback and hope that they go beyond that and not penalize them at all in their grades? Or do you think that, and then later on in the course, if you're still doing it, then start to take away some of these design points?
Good question. So the question is that some students early on aren't aware of the ways to shorten up and tighten up lines, like plus equals might be coins equals coins plus something. Or if they're checking a Boolean value, they might be checking if something equals true or if something equals false when they don't need to check if the Boolean is equal to true. They could just use the variable name there. And so this is a case where when we're deciding on a design score, it's at least when I do my grading on design, I'm not really like making comments and then counting up the number of comments and that maps to a specific design score. Usually the commenting on it and the scoring of it I treat separately, that I'll first go through and make all of my design comments. And then I'll go back and look holistically at the problem and say, OK, on the whole, where would I rate this out of 5? And if there's a lot of areas where there are places to tighten things up, that might influence that judgment. But oftentimes, just like one thing isn't really enough to sway it by a whole point. But certainly, later on, I will hold students to the expectation that they have looked at previous feedback and have implemented it. That if I see a mistake in one problem and I make a comment on that about how to improve it, and they make the same mistake on a future problem, that's something that I will definitely be thinking about as I'm evaluating that problem. OK. And again, for design, this is generally how we would think about scoring things out of 5. 3 out of 5 tends to be a pretty good design score, just because 5 out of 5s are very, very rare, if almost never given, at least at the college. And a 4 out of 5 means like very, very good design. 3 out of 5 is a good design score. 2 is what we would generally say, OK, there's really a fair amount of room for improvement here. And then 0 and 1 are usually for limited to no effort. Some teachers prefer to grade design out of a 3-point scale instead of a 5-point scale, just because sometimes it's hard to know what's the difference between a 3 on design and a 4 on design, and maybe you want fewer buckets. And so that's certainly something you can do as well, although at the college we use the 5-point scale. And let's take a look at style now, the final of the axes. So style is answering the question, to what extent is your code readable? So this is how the code looks. So is it, how well is it commented, indented, or variables correctly named, as was pointed out before? And so this is really answering questions about, so if correctness is, does the code work? If design is, how well does the code work? Style is about, how does the code look? And so things that we're thinking about, style is the next most subjective, so design is probably the most subjective. There are still areas for disagreement about style, about where curly braces should go, for example. We have a recommended style guide. You can go to the CS50 manual and look at the recommended style guide that we have in terms of how code should generally look. And students also have access to Style 50, which is a tool that you probably saw yesterday, which students can use in order to benchmark their programs against our style guide to see whether or not it's well styled. Now again, just like Check 50, we say that Style 50 is suggestive but not determinative. There are some things that Style 50 will look for, like excess spacing or curly braces that are in the wrong place, for instance. But there are other things that Style 50 can't answer. Style 50 can't answer the question, did the student use reasonable and good variable names? Because that's something that really only a human can judge and decide. And so Style 50 will produce a style score, but we recommend that this be just a suggestion and not necessarily the final one. And students generally tend to pick up on the fact that style scores are easy points to earn, that they can run Style 50 on their own code and fix the style mistakes. And especially at the college and in the latter half of the course especially, that if we find code where students just clearly haven't run Style 50 on it at all, that can be a pretty big flag for us that the code is just not well styled, that the student really didn't put in a whole lot of effort in trying to make sure that it was well styled. So good style is important. It's important to emphasize why good style is important. It makes it easier to spot errors. It makes it easier for someone to read the code and understand the code. And so when we're looking at style, things to think about are, is it clear to tell what the different blocks of code are? Oftentimes, students will just put all their code in a big, long sequence of lines, and it's not logically clear what part of the code is doing what. Is it clear what the variable is doing based on its name? So maybe, as was mentioned before, values is not the best of names for a variable, because what does values actually mean? It's not always clear just by looking at it. Here's one that I like to use a lot in terms of comments and how the comments are working. If I didn't understand C code, would I be able to tell what's happening based on the comments alone? So that doesn't necessarily mean comment every line. In fact, that's probably a bad thing to do. But if generally speaking, the student is explaining, here's what this block of code does, and here's what that block of code does, if you can just read through the comments and get a sense for what's going on in this program, that's often a very good sign of well-commented code. And on the flip side of things, you don't want so many comments that you're just distracted by how many comments there are. If every line of code is commented, then that detracts from the usefulness of comments, because then it's not really clear what the blocks are doing anymore. And so there is a balance to be found there as well. And again, style is suggestive and not determinative. So at this point, so again, here's how we might evaluate style on a 5-point scale, that 4 and 5 are generally considered to be good style scores, that really students should be running Style 50 on their own code to see, is the code well styled? But then also thinking about the things that Style 50 doesn't consider, about variable names and are the comments clear and understandable. And on a 3-point scale, it might look a little bit something like this, where a 2 or a 3 might be considered a good style score.